The Unshackled Waves, episode 260.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Australia, this is The Unshackled Waves with Tim Wills, brought to you by theunshackled.net.
Hello everyone, welcome to another Waves episode. An ongoing political story the past few months has been the attempted takeover of Fred Niles' Christian Democratic Party by two members of the party's youth wing, 19-year-old Samrat Joshua Gruhl, who's previously been a contributor to The Unshackled, led a motion at a state council meeting on Saturday, the June the 1st, to dismiss the board of the party. He was assisted by 22-year-old Joel Jamal, who is a contributor to Carnage House Productions. Samrat's motion was successful, though the party president Ross Clifford claimed because he'd adjourned the meeting, the vote was invalid. A two-month legal dispute ensued, with a revote occurring at another state meeting on Saturday, the 10th of August, with a vote of no confidence in the board being overwhelmingly defeated, 80 votes to 12. It was an extremely bold move for 2 years to try and overthrow Fred Niles, who founded the first incarnation of the Christian Democrats in 1977 and was first elected to the New South Wales Parliament in 1981. The party failed to retain a seat in the New South Wales Parliament for the first time in its history in the March 2019 state election, with the minor party field becoming particularly crowded. Certainly the Christian Democrats needed to regroup and explore the best way to go forward. But was such an extreme course of action, especially from members so young and inexperienced, the best way to do it? Well, Samrat and Joel are my guests today, where I will ask them to reflect on their chosen course of action and what their political plans are for the future. Samrat and Joel, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Now, there's been a lot of requests for you two to be on this show, given that all of the news that you two were making with your motion with the Christian Democratic Party. Now, obviously, you're motivated because you believed in the party and its philosophy. So to start off the show, I just want to get an answer from you about why you decided to join the party and why, well, given that there's so many options, why it was the party for you.
It was about late 2016. I was moved back to Australia looking for a political party. And I was sifting around, and at that time, I don't believe Australian Conservatives were around. One Nation was up in Queensland, and all the other minor parties were just starting up. And so I was like, I need a good moral party to join. And the only one around New South Wales was the Christian Democrats. And so that's initially why I joined them. And as I got more involved and did more volunteering for them, you know, it just became clear that this is the party I wanted to kind of commit to. And that's what I did. And looking around now, there's obviously a lot more choice of people going to politics. So back then it was the only kind of solid conservative party around.
Yeah, and I guess with me, when did I join? I joined the youth movement of the Christian Democrat Party early this year. It was not long after I'd met Samrat. We ran into each other because he was involved with the Australian Conservatives, some of the Australian Conservatives members who recommended me to meet him. And, you know, we crossed paths and we just got on like a house on fire. And, you know, he told me about some of the things that the CDP sort of stood for and what he's trying to do in the young CDP to sort of, you know, invigorate it. And yeah, it really excited me, especially because they were very proud Christians. You know, because I was also, of course, you can be a member of two parties at once, being the Australian Conservatives and the Christian Democrat Party. And the Australian Conservatives, they were somewhat Christian. They recognized that their values were rooted in Christian values, but they weren't overtly Christian. And if they did brand themselves that way, it wouldn't make them unique because there was already a party with that mandate. So it was refreshing to be a part of both.
Now, Samrat, you're a candidate for the Christian Democrats at the New South Wales state election for Mount Druitt, where you live. And we had you on the Unshackled's election night live stream that evening. You got a solid vote there. So you, yep. I remember you were very busy during the campaign, and obviously campaign management in any political party is stressful. But is that when your concerns about how the party was being managed began to develop?
Absolutely. When I was running for Mount Druitt, the way I kind of saw the campaign being taken over by one particular candidate in the upper house, it raised lots of red lights to me about how they might be doing the same with the broader party in general, and you're trying to push for their own agenda as opposed to looking out for the party as a whole. And when I started to dig a bit deeper into why there's certain issues in the party, it just pointed back to a few people who are serving their own agendas as opposed to doing what's best for the membership. And that's what ticked me off around the end of the state campaign. Then we had the federal campaign. The exact same thing happened again, where the same issues popped back up, and it was the same couple of people running the show and just ignoring the rest of the membership.
In a state campaign, the only way for most of the time for minor parties to win is to win a seat in the upper house, and the New South Wales Legislative Council, it only has a quota of 4.3%. So of course, in a New South Wales state election, all the promotion is going to be of the upper house candidate, and the lower house candidate is designed to be able to bump up the upper house votes. Though I did notice that the Christian Democrats, they had less lower house candidates than previously, but it was a very crowded minor party field in that Legislative Council election at the March poll. Australian Conservatives, they ran in their first New South Wales election. They no longer exist now, but there was also the Liberal Democrats. Obviously, the Shooters and Fishers were there, but also One Nation with Mark Latham as the lead candidate, who was a big draw card and who hadn't run a real campaign in New South Wales for many years. They managed to get two quotas. So could you really explain the defeat on the internal party management alone?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe around the year 2000, the CDP got 10% of the state vote, something like that. And that's when Fred should run for the upper house, but he didn't do it then. And so the success of other minor parties like the Australian Conservatives, like One Nation, is due to the CDP's internal management. If the CDP took that 10% of the vote they got a couple of decades back, and just capitalize on that and built the party up, built the youth movement up, and built the brand up, then there'd be no space for Mark Latham to come along and swipe up four seats. There'd be no space for the Ozcon brand to even appear in New South Wales. And that's all coming back down to poor management and people just serving their own agenda as opposed to the agenda of the party. If you think about it, when you look at the party's vote after that point, it's just been around a stable 3%, drops a little bit under, goes a little above that. And that's enough to elect just one person. And that's the kind of agenda I've seen the party following, is that we're a party of one or maybe two people, and don't go beyond that because it's not what we're about. We're just about that one or two people. And that's why other parties did so well in New South Wales.
Unlike Sam, I can actually speak towards both parties, the Australian Conservatives I was a member of, and the Christian Democrat Party. But starting with the Christian Democrat Party, I remember talking to Samrat during the time of his when he was running for a seat in Mount Druitt, and he was telling me about how he gets a certain amount of money to run his campaign. He's on a budget, and how he just completely didn't want to do stuff like letterboxing. He was using unconventional methods to get votes, and that's what I thought you should be doing, but that's not what the rest of the party was doing. And you look at the votes that they ended up getting. Paul Green, he needed 5,000 votes, didn't get it, got thrashed in the election, and the Australian Conservatives did no better. I mean, they had their hands tied, especially from the leadership, of course, being Corey Bernardi. I've got a lot to say on that if we want to delve into it, Tim, but similarly, it was a failure of leadership there, where a lot of the most brilliant members weren't able to do their best work.
Yes, I interviewed Ricardo Bossi on the failure of the Australian Conservatives, not just in the federal election, but also in the New South Wales state election. And Yeah, obviously, Cory Bernardi has taken the Australian Conservatives name and deregistered, but I know that they're Ricardo Bossi and Sophie York are staying behind to build something new. But yeah, like I said, we'll stick with the Christian Democrats for now. Both of you are very young and inexperienced in politics. I mean, you hadn't been in the party very long. There are frustrations and setbacks in any political career. I was a member of a political party for a number of years, so I've experienced this. So my advice to you would have been, if you were feeling that things weren't being managed right, is to probably just suck it up for the time being and play the longer game if you're unhappy.
Yeah, well, you know, that's advice lots of people have been giving. And I asked them, well, how did that work for you? And the results are always dismal. You know, you've got the whole bunch of right-wing factions, young liberals playing the long game, and they're not having much success here. And when you look at the long game, you know, you think, okay, you know, maybe in 5 years we can work, you know, our way up and then change the party. Maybe in 10 years. Maybe when we're 40 or 50, we can finally bring the party from the brink of death. But the issue is that while we all play the long game, you know, the left-wing parties, the socialist groups, the Muslim groups, they're all playing the short game. They're coming in and making huge gains in, you know, smallest amounts of time. So while we're here trying to plot for long haul, they're here taking over space, and that's going to make it even harder in the long run to take that space back.
Joel?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah, look, it's not quick enough. It's not quick enough. I'm sitting on a recording where I talked to the CDP board on the weekend, actually, and tell them about, you know, what happened in my country and with Lebanon and Syria and how the countries essentially got ruined. And it was because of that same talk. Oh, don't worry, try next time. Try next time. It'll be better next time. You know, it's like, no, this is life and death. There are significant forces, and I cite Ricardo Bossi because he's outlined them as the five forces fighting against Western civilization, Christian values, and all of that. And you need to realize the urgency. We are on the clock. There are, you know, big tech is shutting people down. There's over 2.5 million subscribers of YouTubers that have contacted me and said they're being silenced. I mean, Google's been manipulating elections in America, 2.6 million votes to 10 million votes. We need to act very quickly and we need to act unconventionally. We need to change our tactics, because if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. So that's pretty much what we wanted to do. And we weren't saying that we knew what to do was best. We weren't under any illusions. What we were requesting was for more support or more guidance and what do you call it, Samrat? Pastoral leadership, sort of, to be stewarded, to have them guide us, for there to be that intergenerational leadership where they sort of take you under their wing and they show you the way, but for also there to be that transition as well. Whereas we'd had Fred as our leader for 40 years with no transition. That's not healthy. And it hasn't been. There hasn't been a transition, full stop.
Well, that's because it's always been Christian Democratic Party, Fred Nile Group, because in the 70s and 80s, that's when Australia's cultural revolution happened. Fred Nile was at the front line fighting it. During that time, he was the most well-known opponent of the permissive society and all of the vice that was happening, especially in Sydney at the time. So I don't think it's fair to say that the Christian Democrats have sort of lost sight of the battle, because they were the front line. It's just that new people have come along throughout the years. Obviously, Pauline Hanson in the 90s about immigration and multiculturalism. But what you just described there, that's just a challenge with, because it's always been a cult of personality around Fred. And I mean, he still does do a pretty good job, even though he is quite old now, and he's been very he's very pragmatic in Parliament. He's not like some of these senators we've seen in Canberra who threaten to blow the whole place up. I think that everyone knew that, well, he's in his 80s now, his time...
85.
His time was coming.
Well, that's not in dispute, if you don't mind me saying. That's not in dispute, if you don't mind me saying, Tim. The problem is, as Samrat said in the past, Fred has been very comfortable in his position, only earning, you know, getting about 3% every, you know, few elections just to get him into parliament. So this is very much Fred's Christian Democrat Party, whereas he hasn't really taken the extra leaps in the past to actually put himself out there and actually grow the party so that it becomes not just the Fred Nile Party but a very strong Christian party. Because now what the prospect we're looking at is we're looking at a depleted membership, we're looking at a lack of leaders, and that is ultimately the why there's such a big market for leadership books right now, including Ricardo Bosi's one, because there is a lack of leadership, and the leaders of a time past have not done an effective job of training up young leaders. And I'm not talking about us, I'm talking about 30-year-olds, I'm talking about 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds, not 85-year-olds.
That's a fair criticism, but many people would argue that the motion you and Samrat tried was out of proportion to those concerns. I just want to, before we get to that, just I read your list of grievances with the party. You spoke in your speech, I know, about the battle that Western civilization faces, but your list of grievances, they seem to me like they were made up of semantical arguments that the party rules and procedures weren't properly followed in several cases. And the basis for your claim for the party being poorly managed is based on a lot of technicalities, which I don't think you could really prove.
Well, yeah, I mean, the actual grievances weren't meant for the board themselves. It wasn't like, hey board, hey Fred, hey Ross, these are our issues. These grievances are meant for the members to understand the technicalities and the technical implications of the leadership issues. And if we did have a list of grievances of what the issues actually were, that would err on the side of very defamatory. Those grievances are the byproduct of a certain culture within the leadership.
If you don't mind me saying, Tim, it was twofold. The list was originally private, and I don't know how it's gotten out, but essentially when I took that list and I gave a 10-minute speech to the board, it was a private speech for 10 minutes. They had a two-hour meeting and they discussed these issues, and then they passed a motion to have my list investigated, essentially. And that was what the interim board we originally planned, was that we'd investigate the matters, we'd bring it towards them, and they could address it properly, which they've done. So we consider that a success. The other part of this, and this is why we've been raising this in June following the election, was that it's not about personality, it's about performance. And unfortunately, on the weekend, we had a comprehensive presentation from Dr. Con Kafataris. He gave a very good speech, and he gave another 5-minute rebuttal, and he explained it's not about personality, it's about performance. You guys, you need to change the executive. We have lost over $250,000 in funding since the last election, since the previous election in 2015. And this is the problem. The reason why Bill Shorten isn't the leader of the Labour Party is because he lost an election. When you have an executive that doesn't meet his marks, he gets the sack. And so why should it be any different? And I think the revelation Samrat and I saw on the weekend, and maybe Samrat's known this for a while, is that it's run like a church. It's not run like a political party. Political parties need votes. They need seats to make a change.
Well, churches need members and donations. So the two are somewhat similar, but yes, you need to convince a whole lot of people who don't attend church on a Sunday to vote for you every 3 or 4 years. Now, I want to go back to that meeting on Saturday, June the 1st. Now, obviously, to get this motion up, which you thought that you did successfully, it would have required a lot of planning. Did you have many high-ranking members or party elders on your side? And although, as we've established, the party is facing problems, and I've established you're both very young, did all of the experience that the party has accumulated over the years need to be thrown out, and you two and the people around you needed to take charge?
There were many high-ranking party office bearers who were in support of us on our side. There were many members in branches who were on our side. And the goal wasn't just wipe out leadership and be like, you know, all of them are out. The goal was to clean the board up and then take a look while they're not on the board, because when they're on the board, they try to halt investigations and subvert votes. So the idea is to get the board off their high horse and off their chairs, and then look at each of them individually and say, okay, which one of you contributed to the culture that's led to the decline of the party? Which of you authorized hundreds of thousands of dollars of illegal transactions? Which of you are responsible for the party being in its current state? And upon that, deciding, okay, which should return to the board because they've done a good job, and which shouldn't be on the board. And it wasn't, you know, people always point at the fact that Fred was on the board, that this is a move to kind of oust Fred. No, you know, that's removing Fred from the board. He's still in parliament. He's still a parliamentarian for the party. No major party has parliamentarians on their executives. It's not a thing. So, you know, it's just the party conforming to what is standard political procedure. And we didn't intend at all to kind of take charge and take lead of the party and, you know, bring into the 22nd or 25th century, whatever. All we intended to do was to push for change and push for the members to actually be able to have a dialogue about the issues and then vote on what they wanted the new direction to be. And then we're out of that.
We see it as an inflection point. We needed to make a correction. There were allegations at the time of corruption and mismanagement of the party, and we wanted to investigate it further. And they just were ineffective as a board, and we decided to take action and put them on notice. And if anything, I think they appreciate that, because it actually invigorated a lot of their members. Like, I mean, that we had a meeting with 100 people on the weekend, and Fred himself said he hasn't seen that for a long time, especially with all the cameras after the June 1st meeting.
Now, after your motion was successful at that June 1st meeting, why did you decide to go to the mainstream media and brag about what you'd done and turn what should be an internal party dispute into a media spectacle? I remember when your Facebook page, Sam Wright, was active, you were sort of being quiet. You were doing a victory lap on it, making all of these salacious posts. Was that the wise thing to do?
It was in retrospect to every other move in the party to reform it. So when I look back at the past 20 years, and every time someone has tried to raise the very issues I've raised, and in 2011, the party had a massive split where thousands of members exodused out into the Australian Christians because of the exact same issues I raised. When I look at that and I say, okay, why didn't it work? It was because the executive knew that if these members raise issues, it'll be internal, and we can just ignore it, and then they'll leave. And, you know, who cares? We don't have to deal with that. But the moment it becomes a public issue, the moment members of the public know that taxpayer money, because political parties receive taxpayer money, that means regardless of if you're a member or not, if you're a Green supporter, some of your tax is going to fund the CDP. The issue was that, you know, taxpayer money is being used in a political party that's breaking laws. And when you make that a public issue, they can't just shut it down. They can't just ignore the debate and close down the forum. They have to address it, and they did address it. And Fred had a media conference the Monday after the State Council where he tried to address the issues. And that was the point. It's like what Trump does. You know, he isn't a naturally boastful person. He just puts that facade on so that the attention comes and people actually look at the issues. And that, you know, that's what I did. I'm not all out there and up my ego and stuff, but that's what needed to happen for the media to kind of pick up on it, and for people's eyes to turn on the CDP and be like, oh, what's going on there? And that's why I did do what I did.
And it worked. It worked. I mean, they didn't want to cover this weekend because it wasn't a young versus old. It was reconciliatory, you know? And I think that I don't regret the fact that we went and made the moves that we did. Perhaps we could have been a bit more less bombastic, but at the same time, that's not what gets Channel 9 and Channel 10 and Sydney Morning Herald, Daily Telegraph, everyone looking at this. They just don't care. They want to see some punches thrown. And as a result, yes, it was very stressful for all parties. But I think it was a net benefit for everyone, even if Samrat and I are not still interested in the party. It was interesting. It was very interesting how it played out, and I don't think anyone could have called it the way it did.
Another media appearance that the pair of you made was on SBS's The Feed. They interviewed all the different parties to the Christian Democrat dispute, spoke with Fred Nile and a few other, including a journalist who'd followed the party. And yes. They came to your house, Samrat, in Mount Druin, yeah. and filmed you at home doing various things. And then you showed them literature you read, and you held up a copy of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto and then a copy of Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf.
Yeah.
And SBS, they decided when they posted the story on social media, they would have you holding the copy of Mein Kampf as the featured image. Now,
yeah.
like, it's not a crime to read Mein Kampf in Australia, and reading it doesn't make you a Nazi, but you volunteered that information. Was that really the wisest thing to SBS, a multicultural broadcaster, to just hold that up so they can make it so that, look, this is the book that I'm most proud to read?
Well, I think, you know, it comes back down to what is the etiquette of someone who's involved in politics, right? When people look at, you know, other people involved in politics, all they see are stuck-up people who are too up themselves in PC culture and, oh, don't make that joke, oh, don't do that because we're all posh here and we're all in suits and ties and fancy and all high and mighty. You know, to an extent, there was lots of trolling in that SBS feed video, but the intention of it all was to show people that, you know, hey, yeah, I'm involved in politics. Hey, I'm doing this, taking political action in the party, but I'm not like those politicians who are too scared to, you know, reveal the fact that they have read a particular book or the other. And it's not about the books. It's about showing people that politics shouldn't be this kind of cultural minefield of don't touch that, don't touch that, don't touch that. Because it creates a separation from politicians and the people, right? It makes politicians almost otherworldly in their conduct, in their tastes, and what they do, and how they hold themselves from everyone else. Yes, there should be a certain separation between how politicians hold themselves versus how the voters hold themselves. But if you make that separation as large as the void between hell and heaven, it makes voters feel alien to everyone involved in politics, and it makes them ignore politics. It makes them feel like, oh, politics is too, for me. And by doing that, I think the barrier, I like to think the barrier closed a little bit. And yes, it was extreme, but it shows people that, people involved in politics aren't completely deprived of humor or completely deprived of having interests in things that are on the extreme left or extreme right. It's not some angelic realm of demons with angel masks who never reveal that they like odd stuff and they like to troll a bit, that's why I like to think of it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but maybe for someone so young as you, as being first introduced to a national audience, maybe that's just not something you should have volunteered right away. But how did you manage to get a copy of that? Did you have to buy it like from a CD shop with a brown paper bag?
I think I got the Communist Manifesto from high school when we were doing the Russian Revolution. That's where I got a copy of that. And I got the English translation of Mein Kampf off eBay.
So, and that was delivered to your actual name?
Yeah. Name, okay. And address, all there. Wasn't too hard to get.
And Joel, did you know that Samrat had volunteered that literature? What did you make of it?
I found out at the same time everyone else did, and I was just shocked, because, I mean, you know what it's like, Tim. You see the insults that get thrown at people on the right, that where there's not a shred of evidence that they're Nazis. And then the next minute, Samrat's like, look, I read the Communist Manifesto and Mein Kampf. It's like, you are asking for it, son. Anyway.
Now, obviously, you weren't just speaking to the general public. You were also speaking to a lot of Christian Democrats supporters who were maybe unsure about where they stood in the dispute. And I remember on your page the next day, Samrat, you addressed members who weren't quite thrilled at sort of how you presented yourself on the feed.
So that address wasn't to members per se, because a large majority of members don't have Facebook. They're over the particular age of users that generally do engage that. The addressment was to two people specifically who weren't even our supporters. They were on the opposite side, who just made an accusation here and there. And that's what the addressment was to. It wasn't to anyone who supported us. People who supported us, they looked at it, they laughed, they, you know, brushed it off. I think it was either the Sydney Morning Herald or the Daily Telegraph did a small follow-up piece on their website where they mentioned the book, and they put it on their social media, and no one cared. No one took a bite. It was just like, oh, you know, so what? It's just a book.
Now, getting back to the serious matters, Ross Clifford, who is the state Christian Democrat president, and Fred Nile, they responded that your motion was invalid because Ross Clifford, he adjourned the meeting. So this set off a legal dispute, which has lasted until now. A fresh state council meeting was called to conduct a revote on Saturday, the 10th of August. So does this mean that your motion, which you thought had legal standing, it was found in the end to be invalid?
No, that's not what happened. So in essence, what occurred, now use a later example of to try to kind of explain the whole mystery around the motion and legality of it. So before the state council in August, the party agent, Philip Gerber, emails were sent back and forth between him, the state director, the board, and former party agents and secretaries. And within the span of a day or two, he had gone from the conclusion that the board was invalidly elected last year and that he was going to dissolve it. And he flipped, and the next hour he said, oh, I completely support the board. The next hour he was like, oh, you know, maybe the motions to even sack the board are completely invalid, and the state council shouldn't have voted it at all. And then he flipped against it. Oh, maybe I'll allow it because it does seem a bit legal. And he kept flipping back and forth. And that's what happened with the motion, is that the lawyers came back and said it's a completely valid motion, but the party executive went, you know, all schizophrenic on me. On one hand, it's legal. The other hand, it's illegal. So the way the party functions is if the law suits what the party wants, that's the law that applies. If it doesn't suit it, then just ignore it. So that's what happened, and the only way to fight that is if you have an extra 500k lying around to take it to Supreme Court. And unfortunately, we didn't have that, so we couldn't, you know, challenge it. You as a member can't do much because the barriers set forth are so tremendously expensive that, you know, it makes people give up and be like, there's nothing more I can do.
Yeah, I think Samrat pretty much hit the nail on the head. The legal advice we were given from the party agent before the event was spot on. And then he flipped, and then he flipped again, and then he did a double flip. And it was incredibly confusing. And if it was confusing for us, you can imagine what it was like for the people that were really hoping something would come from this. And in essence, we thought we had dotted our I's and crossed our T's. But no, it seemed like inconclusive. They somehow managed to brush it off and say that they took our motion on notice and that made it okay. That's what the official narrative is. That's what the official notes that they took on the day were, that my motion that I put forward of no confidence would be taken on notice and that would be voted on at a later date, which was this last weekend on the 10th of August. So it took them 2 months to get round to that. But in terms of the gymnastics that were done for them to do that, amazing. They just don't want to, they just can't deal with the fact that, you know, Samrat didn't like the fact that Samrat was pointing out the inequities, both of management and of performance. And we really saw that on the weekend when they stacked the membership with people whose minds were already made up and they didn't listen to a thing we said.
Well, maybe you should have stacked back, or should have been stacks on the mill, as I call it.
Well, those people are out of the party now, unfortunately. They saw the light before us.
Something that you've attempted, it's never occurred before in an Australian political party that a bunch of young whippersnappers have been able to knock off the entire old guard. And so my personal prediction is that this would happen. There'd be some sort of revote and things would return to somewhat normality. Going to my next point, it's all very easy to point out what's going wrong in a political party. You talked about some of it, the fact that it is an older membership and they tend to just do campaigning the old-fashioned way. You mentioned letterboxing, still sending out things through snail mail. With everything these days, it's online with targeting of people on social media. But you mentioned Australian Conservatives. My newsfeed was polluted by content from the Australian Conservatives, and I got emails from them all the time. So they were doing things the modern way, but obviously it didn't help them. So go into a bit of detail about what your vision would be to change the party, and most importantly, why it would work, because that's people have to believe that you've got the answer.
Firstly, I'll tell you how you can fix it up. It's a one-issue party, and it shouldn't be. Now, I'll tell you why. Because when people go out to vote, and they say, okay, what party am I going to vote for? They're not thinking about, oh, okay, maybe I'll vote for this party because it's for same-sex marriage or against same-sex marriage. Maybe I'll vote for this party because of the abortion bill stuff. They're thinking about, I'm going to vote for this party because I want my taxes cut. Or I'm going to vote for this party because they're going to build a metro here. Or because this party has good policies that are going to affect my business, or because this party is going to address the broken Centrelink system. And that's how you fix the party up. You make it a party that addresses issues people care about, in addition to the Christian ones. And you add a Christian spin to other issues. And that's how you do it. It's as simple as that. It's you just give people what they need and what they're looking for. If they're looking for a party that addresses things close to home, they're going to vote for your party. They're not going to vote for you just because you say, oh, I'm going to slash immigration to like 0%. They don't care about that. They care about tangible things before they're going to look at the immigration rates and look at same-sex marriage and abortion. And that's just how you do it. You just expand the issues. The second thing to do is to stop using kind of a scary culture and scary words and being ultra negative all the time. And one of the issues with right-wing parties is all the language they use is always very pessimistic about the future, right? They're always like, oh, this is happening, that's going to destroy Australia. This is happening, that's going to destroy Australia. This is going to destroy us. This is going to destroy us. And when people go to vote or they watch your ads, they go on your website, they don't want to hear that this is a negative future that's going to occur for Australia. They want to hear, what are you going to do about it and what's the positive future going to look like? They want positive language. And when the party got McCrindle, that analytics survey company, to do a bunch of research for us, they came back saying that. They came back saying, your party is too negative. You need to be positive. Talk about same-sex marriage, talk about abortion, but talk about the positives of what you're going to do. Instead of saying we're against same-sex marriage, we're against abortion, you say we're pro-traditional marriage, we're pro-life. And that's how you do it. Just be more positive.
I don't agree with that switch, because we see time and time again that negative campaigning works. I mean, that's how Scott Morrison won the federal election, not because he had a comprehensive manifesto for the next term, but because he was able to scare the voters senseless about the taxes and danger to the economy that Bill Shorten posed. So negativity does work.
I mean, in some cases it does work, right? There's circumstance in which it can work if you're a large party. If you're a giant party powerhouse and people are conditioned into voting for you election after election after election, when you use negative language and scare tactics, you're only swinging about a few percent of a vote, right? You're reaching the very, very niche people that are swing voters, right? And that's why minor parties get in on 1 or 2%, because they're targeting with their scare tactics and negativity that very marginal vote. So when Scott Morrison's talking about Bill Shorten's going to, you know, tax this, tax that, communist this, communist that, he's targeting a small fraction of the swing votes that will get him back in. And that's what he did. It's not going to change the minds of people who always vote Liberal or people who always vote Labour. It's targeting the marginal vote.
Let's reconcile what we've got there. I'd certainly think that the reason why I didn't like to get involved with the Christian Democrats for so long until I met Samrat was because I did genuinely view them as a negative party in the way, not just the way that the language, but, you know, we try to emulate as Christians Jesus, and I didn't feel like they were bringing the best parts of Christianity out. I didn't see it that way. And if that's their Christianity, so be it. But it wasn't how I sort of saw it. Even the way that, you know, Israel Folau sort of talks about same-sex marriage, he said it in the context of, I want the best for you people, and that's why I'm praying that you guys come to Jesus, you get to know him, and you change your ways. It was from a place of love, but I never got that message when they say it that way, and it would have been great if the messaging was different. Now, with regards to Scott Morrison, I do think he, in terms of when he was attacking policies of the other side, yes, he was negative. Yes, there were some fake news things that came out, and you know, it worked. And that's the thing, everyone knows that people on the right generally are more sensitive to fear and all that, and that works. And I mean, that's how a lot of people have dissected the American election as well, and there's some truth to that. But with regards to Scott Morrison, he also had a very positive message. He has a round face, a big smile. He utilized social media incredibly well, and he'd keep people in the loop about what he's doing. And, you know, the whole campaign about the we're back in black, you know, we're on target to be in a, you know, and none of that, who the hell knows if he's telling the truth or not, you know, but he looks positive. Whereas with Labour, they were overwhelmingly more negative, and I don't think that helped them. I think that Bill Shorten didn't come across as a very positive guy, and there's nothing to look forward to.
Yeah, that was the other thing why Scott Morrison won, because he comes across as the daggy dad, relatable. Yeah. And yeah, their social media strategy was spot on. But you mentioned the Israel Folau issue, and yeah, the Instagram post that got him sacked, it was very fire and brimstone. And obviously, Fred Nile has been quite vocal against sin throughout his years, but I'm finding, especially with online, that, you know, to get people's attention, you need to show them that something is not right. If you get people to sign a petition that we need more strawberry ice cream, that's not going to get many signatures. But if you have a petition that stop putting toxins in ice cream that's making us sick, you might get a few more signatures. That's just an example I made up. It's not true.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I agree with that technique of doing it, and I don't like strawberry ice cream. No, look, I certainly think that there are times it's needed, but at the end of the day, especially anyone that's looking at the US election right now, I would say the standout people in the Democrat Party, the people that, you know, you don't have to know a thing about it, but they're the people relaying a positive message. They're not the ones always attacking Trump every step of the way. There are times when you hear people talk about a real positive message, like, yeah, you know, I could sign up to that. And the person's not bagging Trump as much. Like, they all bag Trump, of course, they have to. But at the same time, there are some, like Andrew Yang, who genuinely demonstrate the ability to wrestle with the ideas. I'd never vote for him, but it's very genuine. It's non-politician like, and I think that's admirable. And I think that's what our party needed to do as well. It just seemed like they weren't genuinely wrestling with the ideas. They would never go out and in the street and have a long form discussion with a democratic socialist, for example.
Now, as we already established, your revote on the motion was unsuccessful. It was defeated overwhelmingly, 80 votes to 12. You said that the meeting was stacked. Well, that was your interpretation of it. And Joel, in your pitch to the members present, basically you said that this is my last stand, that if we're not listened to, then that's pretty much it for us.
Almost sounds like I was spitting the dummy. You could probably say I was spitting the dummy. Let me tell you why. A range of things had happened by that point. I wasn't originally going to get up and speak in front of the members, and I'm going to release a video soon about that. But essentially, they'd voted, the members had voted, so that Samrat couldn't speak in that meeting. They had confiscated Dr. Khan's colored material so that he could give his presentation on the analytics of how the party's going, just facts, nothing but the facts. They didn't let him use the provided projector. They dragged a news reporter from Eternity News out by this with the security. And then they basically made it, their entire pitch. They didn't wrestle with the ideas put forward, and it was all emotional. It was basically the left. And then I got up there and I pretty much told them who I was, why we were doing what we were doing. We had nothing against the party, the president. We acknowledged the great work they were doing, but the problem was that they haven't learned the lessons of history. And I told them about what happened in my country of Lebanon. And I told them exactly how God is on your side, but the problem is you need to learn the lessons of history. It's about life and death at times, and you need to make the changes possible. And then I told them, why don't you listen to Dr. Khan when he gives you the facts? And he says you need a dramatic change of course. Why did you vote for Samrat to not speak? And you're wondering why the youth are leaving the party. And I finished on the point of saying, give me a reason to stay, because there are other parties with comprehensive manifestos that are very attractive. Why the hell should I stay, essentially? And I left it at that. I only had 3 minutes to work with, but that's essentially what I said.
Samrat, you've always got a lot to say. It's not often that you're gagged.
Yeah. It was, when you look at the votes, that was the closest vote of the day, was whether or not to silence me. I think it was 50 to 40 or 50 to 30-ish. And that was the last straw for me. It was that the membership had become so delusional, or the ones that attended, I would say, had become so delusional that they just didn't want to hear the issues. And the reason why the end vote was 80 to 12 was when 2011 happened, almost 3,000 to 4,000 members left and joined the Australian Christians. When the October convention happened last year, you had almost 50 members leave then who had voted for the motion then. And then when the June convention happened, you had 30 members who attended that state council leave after that because they just saw the board just ignoring it, all the issues, and just turning a blind eye to everything. And then the end result was you had 12 members that stayed and 80 members that were just brought on to subvert the vote.
Squash the rebellion.
Vote to disallow all people to speak and just quench all opposition. It was just the most undemocratic thing I have ever seen when the mob uses their power to destroy democracy.
At least from the right, anyway.
Now, at a young age, you've both had a crash course in political brutality. So what are your plans now? Obviously, you've got your whole lives ahead of you.
I think we've had a good run, Samrat. I think we should retire. No, I think, I personally have a lot of plans. I mean, I do work a full-time job. I have a lovely partner and I have a lovely family. So, I mean, this is in no way means the end. There's a lot of political battles going on right now, and I can elaborate on those if you want, including with university campus, the mandatory sexual consent stuff, censorship of Australian YouTubers, and there's a whole bunch of fights that need to be fought and, you know, new parties being formed, but I'm still very busy. It'll be nice to have a break from the CDP stuff because it was certainly more destructive rather than constructive. And yeah, but I'm glad that we've sort of tied the knot on this one.
It's the end of a direct party involvement for me, so I don't think I'm ever going to go back into a single political party and be a member and work my ass off for them. But it's certainly not the end of my involvement in politics. And I was talking to someone last night who was mentioning that this is kind of a high point in my life, and there's no way I can kind of top what we've done the last few months. And there's a lot more coming. And next year you can expect a lot more action from myself, but it won't be in direct party involvement. It'll be more across the lines and less partisan to one group.
Now, given the extreme course of action you two decided to attempt, do you see that with your future political ambitions that people might view the pair of you as loose cannons and somewhat untrustworthy? Like, how do they know that you're not going to suddenly turn and and overthrow them.
We've seen loose cannons in the CDP, and I've frequently looked at what I've done and what these loose cannons do. And anyone who's smart in politics will know that we're not loose cannons, and there's a very big difference between loose cannons and people who try to affect change. Loose cannons don't have a target. They just go off and fire at everyone and switch sides erratically and just shout and scream everything that comes to mind. I think more than anything that in terms of conservative politics, what we have done is shown people that we are absolutely trustworthy, not towards to people. You know, we don't swear allegiances to a group or a person. You know, we swear allegiances to a cause, and to that cause we won't divert. And that's, you know, when I've spoken to lots of people on the right, that's what they've seen, is that you know you can trust these people because they're going to take action when illegal stuff has been done, when the leadership diverts from the right course. And that's what people want. They don't want sheep. Well, you know, some do want sheep, but in terms of leadership and managers and people pushing the movement, they don't want sheep. They want people who can think for themselves and who can push the cause and won't compromise just because some 70-year-old is going to threaten to terminate their membership.
Yeah, look, I certainly think that the evidence is to the contrary. Correct me if I'm wrong, Samrat, but personally, I've certainly seen more doors opening up now at a more rapid pace than they were before. And they're not destructive doors either. They're constructive ones. They're real fights rather than party infighting. And if that, I'd like to think that that's an indication that people like the work that's, you know, been happening elsewhere, and they like someone that's going to say what they mean and mean what they say and actually speak out on these issues, because I think it's become unfortunately a rare thing. And I don't want to go into it, but just briefly, I've had a guy reach out to me at UTS, and he's the university, and you guys are the first to hear this, university isn't letting him graduate because he didn't complete this mandatory sexual consent test. Now, that was a fight I started, but it will be a fight I help finish, because these are issues that need to be fought, and no one else is fighting them.
Well, I was glad that I could finally sit down with the pair of you and go through this whole political story and unpack it every step of the way. And as you've both said at the end there, you're certainly not deterred from a future political activism. And now that things have calmed down, I hope that I can have you back on the show, maybe in the future, to be a regular contributor.
Yeah.
That'd be a pleasure. Thanks very much, Tim.
And that's the show for today. As I've previously stated, Waves episode will now focus on single topics rather than cramming all the current news into one show. But don't worry, we will still cover all the big issues that matter right now. Don't forget to also check out the latest episode of Detonation, hosted by my colleague Steele Archer. Episodes are available on the Unshackled's YouTube channel, and there is also the new dedicated Detonation YouTube channel where the episodes are slowly being uploaded to. We've also just broadcast a new episode of The Uncuckables, our joint production with XYZ and The Rational Rise, which is live every Thursday night at around 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on its own dedicated YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe to that to be notified when we go live. Remember that to counter the fake news and algorithmic manipulations, we've just seen Project Veritas release more damning information about Google. So for your search needs, use duckduckgo.com and InfoGalactic for your information needs as an alternative to Wikipedia. There is also free speech social media, which The Unshackled has a presence on. We're on gab.com/TheUnshackled. We are also on minds.com/the_unshackled. And we are on miwi.com/p/TheUnshackled. We also have our growing Telegram channel on the encrypted messaging service at t.me/TheUnshackled. Remember that the best method of supporting our work here at The Unshackled, and so that we continue to grow and reach as many people as possible, is to support us financially. You can do so at patreon.com/TheUnshackled or at paypal.me/TheUnshackled. We also have our premium membership option on our website, theunshackled.net/membership, and our web donation form at theunshackled.net/donate. We are also on subscribestar.com/TheUnshackled, and we also have our online store with our popular merchandise, theunshackled.net/store. So thanks once again for your company, and we'll see you next show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Unshackled Waves. Please visit theunshackledwaves.net for all the ways to subscribe and follow the show. Don't forget to pick up your free ebook at theunshackledbattlefield.net and keep checking out theunshackled.net for all the latest news and commentary.